Today's edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is full spectrum CBD? Full spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than full spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, full spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's ancientlifeoil.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller podcast for the 25th day of February 2020. Hey, I know the date. I know the year. It's a banner thing. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. It's Tuesday. It just feels like another Monday. Oh, we've got a lot of stuff to get to. Chris Matthews groveling to the left. Groveling because they were going to take his scalp next, and he doesn't want that. It's funny how you can make Nazi analogies against Republicans. No big deal. You get a promotion. Hell, you get a raise. You get power at the network. But If you make one about Bernie Sanders, well, no. So we have that audio, and we'll get into that. Bernie and Pete and Tom Steyer doing town halls with CNN. How much free airtime can they possibly give these people? We also got the Dow collapsing. Is the Dow collapsing? What's going on with the Dow? Everybody's all upset, and I look at it, and I just go, no big deal. Am I the only one who thinks it's no big deal? It's weird. I'll explain why. It may end up being a very big deal, but as of right now, I don't see this as a huge big deal. But we do have to talk about the coronavirus and the fear that that is instilling in people. So we'll get to all of that and more, but I just want to say first off, thank you for listening to an Intel and a Friend and all that good stuff, rating and reviewing on iTunes and sharing on social media and sending me the emails and everything. And, it's been a hell of a day, If you'll indulge me for a second, I've been shopping for a car. We had the one car that the family could actually fit in, but didn't have a whole lot of trunk space. Then we had the Mini Cooper, which is the first car I ever bought new. And, I'm looking at that thing and I'm thinking you can't fit anything in the back seat. With one kid, you could kind of cram it behind the wife in the passenger seat because she's short. Move that seat forward. That worked. With two, no, not going to do it. So I had to get rid of the old trusty red Mini Cooper and traded that sucker in and got a crossover, as they say. It's a used, a 2016. Got a really good price on it. Took a long time to find it. But my God, if you ever want a terrorist to talk, if you ever want a prisoner to beg for mercy and offer you whatever information you want, make them buy a used car or a new car. Make them buy a car. Give them a budget and send them out to buy a car. And see, they'll, 5 minutes, I'll be like, I confess, I'll do whatever you want. I don't know. Please make this stop. Where are the international human rights observers? We need, this is a violation of the Geneva Conventions. It must be. What a horrible experience. What a pain in the ass. And you never, no matter what you do, you never walk away really feeling completely satisfied. Like, phew, just got a good deal. Just got a good deal. No, you don't. Even if you did, you'll never know it. Yeah, I guess you'll know it in like 5 years if the thing hasn't crapped out on the side of the road. But in general, just such a pain in the ass. And the whole car dealership thing is such a scam. Such a scam. This is the absolute bottom price I could ever possibly do. All right, then, see you later. Well, wait a second. I just happened to find more money that I didn't need to collect from you. Such a scam. Such a complete scam. There was just an easier way. Just an easier way. That's all I'm asking for. All right, well, hopefully I won't need an easier way for a very long time. Hopefully this car lasts quite some time and allows for the family to trek off to places where families go, wherever that may be. Looks like we got a big enough trunk that we can put stuff in, unlike the Mini in the other car. So that's all you needed to know. Let's get into the news of the day. I want to start off with the stock market. Can we start off with the stock market? Because it was all blaring, all screaming, all panicking all day long. Ooh, Dow futures are down over 900 points. It's going to be a bad day for the Dow. It's going to be horrible. They stopped trading. They actually stopped trading. What's going on with the stock market? Is it the coronavirus? Is it that Bernie Sanders is winning primaries? What is it? Why is it? Who knows what goes on? What the blah, 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 blah. These people have no freaking clue. They all panic because panic gets eyeballs. Panic gets rating. Ratings, panics get clicks on websites. I tell you, right now, you're looking at, what, a 3% drop in one day, which is nothing. Now, if you're just looking at the number, 1,000 points, like 1,031 points, my God, holy Frank Tanana, how can the economy survive such a massive, massive drop? Back when the stock market was around 3,000, 4,000, and it would drop 500 points, yes, absolutely, it was a big, huge deal to see a massive, massive drop in this many points. But we're well past that. We're at Dow 27,000, 28,000, 29,000. Soon we'll likely get to 30,000. So the idea that this is somehow a massive panic sell-off doesn't strike me as a good long-term strategy for anybody. Remember, slow and steady wins the race. Do what you want with your stocks. Do what you want and manage your 401ks, however you decide to manage your 401ks. But just remember that people who panic are the ones who pay the price. If you got bad stocks, you got bad stocks and you should drop them. But everything in the economy is temporary. If you can ride it out, I would recommend riding it out. 1,000-point drop is not the same when the Dow started out near 29,000 that day as it was if the Dow started out at 3,000 that day. They're indicating very different things. While some of this is undoubtedly concerns over China as China clamps down more and more to try and get control on the coronavirus, some of this is undoubtedly, hey, my stocks are way up. I'm going to take some profits. And that is always the case when stocks go way up. Economists don't really have any idea. Could it be Corona? It could be. Depends on the individual stock. Could it be people just going, hey, I'm going to pull some profits. Why not? Then could be that too. Some of it could be panic selling. Oh my God, the stock market is down. You call your broker and go sell, sell, sell. Get me out of this thing before it crashes. That's problematic. And also, when you do that, you're the one who ends up getting screwed. It's not really the other people that end up getting screwed. So I would just urge some caution. Yes, there is reason to be concerned over the coronavirus. Italy, apparently, northern Italy, is being hammered with this. In Milan, they are doing fashion shows streaming online because people don't want to gather together. Then again, it's Italy. There's a good chance those people are going to smell and they didn't want to get together in the first place. Just kidding. They all smell the same over there, so they wouldn't even notice the difference. But, you know, let's try and keep this in perspective. Be on guard. Wash your hands. Don't be around people who are coughing and hacking up a lung if you don't have to. Maybe avoid your friends who just got back from that one dream vacation where they rode bikes along the Great Wall of China. I don't know if you can do that or not. Probably not. But, you know, around just going to China. Maybe if you want to stop seeing friends who had Chinese food for lunch. I don't necessarily blame you for that. Again, there's a smell factor involved there. But to think that somehow the economy is coming to a screeching halt seems to be a little bit beyond what facts are in evidence as of yet. Are there a lot of coronavirus cases? Yes, most of them are centered in Asia. There are, what, like 36 here in this case, in this country? It has not spread like wildfire in this country so far. Knock on wood. But be calm. be smart. I'm always reminded of one of my favorite lines from any movie ever, and it is from Men in Black, which is probably not what you expected me to say, but because you're thinking, who likes Men in Black that much? And the first one has its moments. It's not about the movie. It's about a line in it where Will Smith has just learned from Tommy Lee Jones sitting on that bench in Battery Park or wherever the hell it is in New York, where he just learned about the existence of aliens and all of this extraterrestrial life going on around him in the earth. And he says, why don't you tell people? People are smart. They can handle it. And Tommy Lee Jones says, the person is smart. People are dumb, stupid, afraid, and panicky and all this. And that's exactly right. Individually, we are all very smart. Collectively, we are all very stupid. That's a big part of the reason why socialism and communism fail. All these collectivist ideas fail. When it's nobody's response, well, when it's everybody's responsibility, it's really nobody's responsibility. Because if picking up trash were everybody's responsibility, and you're walking past some trash, but you just don't feel like touching, maybe it's particularly gross trash, half-eaten hot dog, chili all over the place, whatever, you go, meh, somebody else will get it. So you just move past it. That's what inevitably happens in collectivism. That's what happens in groups. Somebody else will do it. In a nation of individuals, in a nation of people acting smartly and rationally, they stop and they pick up the trash. Maybe they grab a bag or something. They do it. Like, oh, that needs to be done. I shall do it. Not that needs to be done. Somebody should do it. That's the difference between liberty and collectivism. And when it comes to stocks and panics, collectivism rules the day. You're going to do what you want to do. I am certainly no stock guru, and I am not trying to give anybody advice. I am trying to make people do what I always try to make people do, whether it's a day where the Dow is down 1,000 or up 1,000, and that is think. Think rationally. Rationally thinking people will mostly make the right choices. Not always. You know your stuff better than I do. I can't tell you what to do about any situation, just like you can't tell me what to do about any situation. Except I can tell you how to do it. Do it smartly. Do it rationally. So as there is a panic, and I highly doubt this will be the last down day for the Dow. A lot of alliteration there. I highly doubt this will be the last down day for the Dow. Be smart about it. If you got a bad stock, a bum stock, get rid of it. If you don't like the way things are going and you don't want to wait, that's fine. Do it out of rational thought, not out of fear. And I will say, you know what? Sooner or later, there's going to come a point where there are going to be some good deals out there in the stock market. They're going to say, hey, wait a second. There are, this one is artificially low. The panic has caused things. And if you got a long enough timeline, if you're not in a hurry, if you're not retiring tomorrow, you know, maybe have a pretty long timeline. And I would recommend that you think of it along those terms, unless you're planning on selling everything and taking a vacation to Antarctica to try and hide until this thing blows over. But the way that the media is portraying this is, I don't think, based on the evidence of the situation. They always find something to blame. They always find some reason to cause hyperventilation, to cause fear. Fear sells, whether it's trying to motivate somebody to vote or it's trying to motivate somebody to pay attention to what's going on in the news, to tune into the news. Oh my God, the Dow dropped how much? I got to watch the news. I got to find out what happened. Remember, the people who are telling you why the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped 1,031 points yesterday are the people who, on the first Friday of every month, when the economic numbers are released and the jobs data are out, are completely wrong about the data. It was, oh, wow, it's way lower than expected or way higher than expected. You never hear about economists' predictions. Nailed it. They all nailed it. Everybody had the exact right number of jobs. They really read the tea leaves. The GDP growth, right, dead solid on. These economists are on the ball. They don't get that. So why would you think they'd be better at telling you what the stock market is doing and why? That's all I'm going to say on it. Tossing it out there, giving you the opportunity. Just want to give you a perspective that you don't necessarily hear in the mainstream media, because keep calm and carry on doesn't sell. Oh, it'll sell tote bags. It'll work really well and graffitied on subway walls and on t-shirts. But in the grand scheme of things, it's not really going to excite the masses like "We're All Going to Die" is. That's my 2 cents. You can take my 2 cents for what it's worth and put it in stocks or put it in your pocket, whatever you want to do with it. But I just thought I'd give it to you. Now we can get on with the rest of the program. But first, a word from our sponsor, Ancient Live Oil. I'm holding mine right. I don't know if that gets picked up. I'm shaking my little container of 250 milligram chocolate mint CBD oil, which I just put some under my tongue because I had a headache after my long-ass day of 4 hours to fill out paperwork to get a car. And it wasn't. It was like 20 minutes worth of paperwork. But the sales guy just took forever. It was just a nightmare. Just a nightmare. It was like 3.5 hours. And getting my license plates off my old car because the screws were rusted. And it was just a total ordeal. Total ordeal. Now I still got to find the title to the old car. But anyway, I got the new one. Anyway, I put the CBD oil under my tongue, and boom, I feel so much better. My eye strain, my headache, and the headache behind my eyes is now gone. My cheap reading glasses are still on my face, but they're not causing me any eye strain. That's the miracle of CBD oil. But don't take my word for it. Check out CBD oil. Do some searches. See what people are saying about CBD oil. Ask people in your life what they're saying about CBD oil. And then once you decide to give it a shot, once you decide to step into the 21st century, you go to ancientlifeoil.com for the finest in 100% organic CBD oil that's not loaded with THC. There's minuscule amounts, the least amount you can get. I mean, you can't get any out of it. You know, can't get all of it out of there. It's organic. It's delicious. Not that you're really going to sit around and enjoy the flavor, but the impacts are almost immediate. It is shocking how quickly and how well this stuff works. Just a little bit of a dropper under your tongue and you feel more relaxed. You feel more at ease. The little pains, the aches and pains that you have around your body that you're like, this is just, I'm going to have to live with this forever. No, it's just better. I don't know how else to put it except to say it's just better. Go to ancientlifeoil.com. Check out a supply. Check one. Buy one. One time. Enter promo code Derek at checkout. You get great discounts and then give it a shot. Be like my dad was like, I don't want to do this. Is this going to get me high? No, it's not. And now he's a believer. Now he's a convert. Now he's a user. Become like my dad. It makes his hip pain go away. AncientLifeOil.com, promo code Derek at checkout. Click the apply button. Great discounts. Try it one time. You will be a believer. It worked for me. Okay. Let's get into the insanity of politics, shall we? Yesterday, I spent the entire show talking about Comrade Bernie Sanders. And as if on cue, Democrats across the country who were Bernie Sanders acolytes went around trying to say he doesn't really praise dictators. He doesn't think well of Fidel Castro. It was misunderstood. What he was really doing was criticizing Fidel Castro. You just didn't notice it. And the fact that he said nice things in criticizing Fidel Castro, well, that's an honest mistake anybody could have made. But Bernie Sanders does not think that Fidel Castro was a swell guy. Well, there was town halls on CNN last night. CNN seems to become the town hall network. And Bernie Sanders was up there, and Fredo Cuomo asked Bernie Sanders about his past praise of dictators, in particular Fidel Castro. But it is important to note that the praise from Bernie Sanders of dictators was not limited to people, you know, who are long since dead. He is praised Nicolas Maduro and refused to condemn Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela as a dictator, even though he has seized absolute power and refuses to relinquish it and is using the military, occasionally firing on his own people, whom he disarmed, or whom Hugo Chavez disarmed, just to put a fine point on it. So With that in mind, don't you love how, by the way, all the stories about Bernie Sanders and his praise for left-wing tyrants is always couched in the long ago comments have resurfaced. Long ago. It's not long ago. Nicolas Maduro has not been in power all that long. And by the way, Bernie Sanders is still actively praising Fidel Castro, even though Castro has been dead for a while. Why? Because Bernie Sanders doesn't see anything wrong with a little bit of murder in order to impose utopia. And, you know, if you want to murder some people who don't think it's utopia, what's the big deal? Who cares? It's sort of we're the happiest country on earth. How'd you do that? Well, we killed all the people who were unhappy. We murdered everybody who was bitching about the government. And now we have the most popular government in the world. Look at these poll numbers. 100% of the people say that our government is awesome. All we had to do was kill everybody we knew of who didn't like the government. And suddenly, even if they existed out there still, they decided that no, this government's pretty good. It's weird. Weird how that works. That's essentially his praise of these dictators. On the issue of literacy, Bernie Sanders again doubled down. Now, Chris Cuomo gave him ample opportunity to sort of backtrack and say, look, I'm not praising Fidel Castro. He did the literacy thing, but, you know, he's a horrible person, killed tens of thousands of people, funded terrorism throughout Central and South America. Just a horrible person. I would never want to say anything nice about him without making sure that everybody was clear that I thought he was a monster. He doesn't say that. He then goes, he basically starts off again by defending what he'd said in the past. In many ways, it's amazing how many ways Bernie Sanders is so much like the left says Donald Trump is. Donald Trump never apologizes for anything, never admits that he's wrong. Well, you've got Bernie Sanders here. All he's got to do is say, you know what, I probably could have put that a better way. Fidel Castro was a murderous dictator tyrant, and the fact that he, you know, pushed literacy to indoctrinate people, by the way, is no excuse, and I probably should have been more careful in my word choice. He's rotting in hell, and the world is a better place for it. Instead, he can't do that, because he doesn't believe that. Bernie Sanders, for all his faults, actually does tell you what he believes. It's just that what he believes is crazy and dangerous, and he's right out there out in front of it, because, you know, I forget who I was talking to, but somebody's like, what the hell's wrong with Vermont? That was my dad. I was talking to my dad on the phone yesterday when I was coming back from buying the car. He's like, what in the hell? I don't understand how not only how Democrats could consider nominating this guy, I don't understand how he gets elected in his own state. And it's like, yeah, you know, there are some states and some people who are just crazy, stupid, and embrace evil. Well, listen to Bernie Sanders be crazy, stupid, and re-embrace the evil that is or was the Castro regime in Cuba.
The response was when Fidel Castro first came to power, which was when? 59? Does that sound right?
59-60.
Okay. You know what he did? He initiated a major literacy program. There was a lot of folks in Cuba at that point who were illiterate. And he formed the Literacy Brigade. You may read that. He went out and they helped people learn to read and write. You know what? I think teaching people to read and write is a good thing.
I think teaching people to read and write is a good thing. Bernie Sanders, 2020. See, the thing is, though, Bernie, they didn't just go out and find the illiterate people out there. They made the literate people read the same things, because that was communist propaganda to indoctrinate the masses. It just so happens that the illiterate people were the easier ones. You teach them to read for the first time, and you give them, you know, the writings of Fidel Castro, the ramblings of Fidel Castro. And by the way, those people learning how to read and write through the writings of Fidel Castro, the revolutionary brother, if they said, hey, wait a second, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, or I don't care for this part or that part, or I have questions, those people were then imprisoned. or killed, or both. You know, maybe they spent some time in prison before they were killed. But that is the way that the so-called literacy program in Cuba was used. It was used as an indoctrination tool, which is, again, why the left wants to expand the education and pre-K and all this crap to as young as they possibly can, because they want to hook them while they're young. The longer somebody is indoctrinated and the more severe the indoctrination is, the more likely they will be to believe it throughout the rest of their lives. Or at least it'll be much more difficult to try and deprogram them throughout the rest of their lives. Just kind of an interesting aside, I thought. But praise of Fidel, you notice he could have talked about Fidel. He should have, could have said murderer, horrible person. Just talked about the so-called literacy program as if, yes, we violently overthrew the Batista government so that we might be able to teach the poor people how to read. Anybody buying that? Anybody buying that aside from the Bernie bros? Well, then Bernie has another bite at the apple. He has another opportunity to just flat out denounce Fidel Castro. It shouldn't be that hard. You could be the biggest fan of trains running on time. I love that trains run on time. This is an amazing thing. And you go, hey, wait a second. Hitler made trains run on time. And you decide that in your love of trains, you go, you know what, though, just checking the numbers, flat out from a statistical standpoint, trains have never been more efficient throughout all of human history and the existence of the train than in Nazi Germany from 1934 to 1938. Boy, those trains were right on time. It was amazing. When it comes to railroad organization, give me a Nazi every time. That wouldn't go over very well, and nor should it, because you're belittling the murder and the suffering that the Nazis brought on. You're just choosing to look at one little dot in a painting and go, you know what, that's a hell of a dot. I like that dot. Could be the worst painting in the world. Could be the worst painting in history, but you're like, that dot, the way that it just sits on the canvas, my God, I love that dot. It's the best dot ever. And you're saying nice things about the artwork of Hitler. You're saying nice things about Hitler. There's no reason to say nice things about Hitler. If you want to talk about trains running on time, you can say, I really like trains running on time. If you want to say things about literacy programs, here's an idea, Bernie. You can just say, I support literacy programs. I want as many people as possible to read as much as humanly possible. But the problem is you chose a totalitarian regime and you cherry-picked one thing and you bastardized the truth about that, but you cherry-picked one thing and you said nice things about this regime. You can't then, because you guys on the left are hypercritical of Donald Trump trying the Trump doctrine in diplomacy and foreign diplomacy. I guess there is kind of domestic diplomacy given the divisions amongst Democrats and Republicans right now. But the president says nice things about Kim Jong-un, right? Now, the left takes him seriously and literally. They go absolutely nuts. My God, can you believe he's praising this dictator? Well, there's a very good reason to do something like that. You want to be in the good graces of somebody like that if you're trying to get them to do something and they have very little reason to do so. You want to get them to like you so that maybe you can influence their decision. The tough talk didn't necessarily work. The sanctions didn't work. The years of acquiescence hasn't worked. So trying something new is what Donald Trump is doing. And that involves kind of saying nice things about them, not saying, oh my God, the way he kills his uncle with an anti-aircraft gun is the best. No, he doesn't say anything like that. He just uses nice words about the person. He's a friend. He wrote a great letter. I greatly appreciate it. I believe we can work together. How much advancement would you think anybody would get if they're sitting down next to somebody they just had a summit with, somebody who is an adversary at a minimum, an enemy at the worst. And when asked about any progress being made, and here comes some salty language, you might want to skip ahead 30 seconds if you don't like that sort of thing. Somebody wrote a rambling review about me and Krista Gall Friday, saying that we swore too much, and my God, it's terrible, and I just can't listen anymore. And like, whatever. But imagine you're sitting there right next to somebody. You're trying to work out a deal that matters to you and to the world. And a reporter says, well, what do you think of Dictator X? And you just go, Dictator X is a fucking douchebag. I don't trust this guy. He's a piece of crap. The world would be better off if he's dead. Let's be honest about it. If Dictator X fell into a meat grinder, I would hope that it would be on slow. He'd be unable to get out of it, but it would be on slow, just slowly grinding him to a fine mesh that could easily be made into patties or meatloaf. How much future diplomacy do you think you would have between you and Dictator X? I'm betting not a lot. If you went around and even tempered it down a little bit, like, wow, this guy's a jerk. He's a liar, a fraud, a monster, and I'm really hoping that I can get him out of office. Hopefully he dies before that. But in the meantime, I'd really like to get some sort of agreement with them that we can both come to terms with that'll stop his nuclear program. What do you think the odds of that person going, huh, well, all right, fair point. I am a bit of a douchebag. I will go for your nuclear deal. I'm betting not much. So when Donald Trump is accused of saying nice things about dictators, he doesn't really talk about them in those sorts of terms. He makes it very personal in a way to try and relate to them, because you want to build trust and, dare I say, a little bit of personal rapport with them to try to make it easier to cut a deal. Now, for Bernie Sanders, Fidel Castro is long since dead. There is no reason to suck up to Fidel Castro. He's gone. He's not. Maybe he'll reserve a seat for you in hell. I don't know. But other than that, there's no real reason to suck up to Fidel Castro. Yet Bernie continues to suck up to Fidel Castro for some weird reason. And actually, when you think about it, it's not that weird of a reason whatsoever. It's because Bernie believes that Fidel Castro was doing good things. And if you have to kill a few thousand people, what's the big deal? 10, 20,000, 30,000, who cares? The end result is what matters to the left. And the end result to Bernie Sanders in Cuba is utopia. So listen to Bernie after he said those things about, oh, the literacy program was so wonderful. So what? Chris Cuomo then gives him another chance. Like, well, you know, you're saying good things about this guy, but he killed a lot of people. He was mean to, Chris Cuomo puts it very poorly, but the sentiment is there. And Bernie's response is equally as telling. He glosses over, ignores completely the murder part, the oppression part, and goes, truth is truth. I'm just focusing on the literacy thing. I don't care about the other things. So if Fidel Castro were alive, maybe Bernie Sanders, a president, Bernie Sanders would appoint him as literacy czar. Who the hell knows? But listen to this exchange. This is the second time, the first time you just heard, the second time that Bernie Sanders had a chance to unequivocally denounce Fidel Castro as a murderous terroristic regime, and he passes and instead decides to praise him.
So, to the Democrats who say, you don't say good things about Fidel Castro. He destroyed freedoms in that country. He picked winners and losers and killed them and put them in prison forever. You don't give him a pat on the back for anything.
You don't give, it's not a quite, truth is truth, all right? Now, if you want to disagree with me, if somebody wants to say that, and by the way, all of those Congress people that you mentioned just so happen to be supporting other candidates, just accidentally, no doubt, coincidentally. But, you know, the truth is the truth. And that's what happened in the first years of the Castro regime.
I think teaching people to read and write is a good thing. Bernie Sanders, 2020. See, the thing is, though, Bernie. They didn't just go out and find the illiterate people out there. They made the literate people read the same things, because that was communist propaganda to indoctrinate the masses. It just so happens that the illiterate people were the easier ones. You teach them to read for the first time, and you give them, you know, the writings of Fidel Castro, the ramblings of Fidel Castro. And by the way, those people learning how to read and write through the writings of Fidel Castro, the revolutionary brother, if they said, hey, wait a second, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, or I don't care for this part or that part, or I have questions, those people were then imprisoned or killed or both. You know, maybe they spent some time in prison before they were killed. But that is the way that the so-called literacy program in Cuba was used. It was used as an indoctrination tool, which is, again, why the left wants to expand the education and pre-K and all this crap to as young as they possibly can, because they want to hook them while they're young. The longer somebody is indoctrinated and the more severe the indoctrination is, the more likely they will be to believe it throughout the rest of their lives. Or at least it'll be much more difficult to try and deprogram them throughout the rest of their lives. Just kind of an interesting aside, I thought. But Fidel, the praise of Fidel, you notice he could have talked about Fidel. He should have, could have said murderer, horrible person. Just talked about the so-called literacy program as if, yes, we violently overthrew the Batista government so that we might be able to teach the poor people how to read. Anybody buying that? Anybody buying that aside from the Bernie bros? Well, then Bernie has another bite at the apple. He has another opportunity to just flat out denounce Fidel Castro. It shouldn't be that hard. You could be the biggest fan of trains running on time. I love that trains run on time. This is an amazing thing. And you go, hey, wait a second. Hitler made trains run on time. And you decide that in your love of trains, you go, you know what, though, just checking the numbers, flat out from a statistical standpoint, trains have never been more efficient throughout all of human history and the existence of the train than in Nazi Germany from 1934 to 1938. Boy, those trains were right on time. It was amazing. When it comes to railroad organization, give me a Nazi every time. That wouldn't go over very well, and nor should it, because you're belittling the murder and the suffering that the Nazis brought on. You're just choosing to look at one little dot in a painting and go, you know what, that's a hell of a dot. I like that dot. Could be the worst painting in the world. Could be the worst painting in history, but you're like, that dot, the way that it just sits on the canvas, my God, I love that dot. It's the best dot ever. And you're saying nice things about the artwork of Hitler. You're saying nice things about Hitler. There's no reason to say nice things about Hitler. If you want to talk about trains running on time, you can say, I really like trains running on time. If you want to say things about literacy programs, here's an idea, Bernie. You can just say, I support literacy programs. I want as many people as possible to read as much as humanly possible. The problem is you chose a totalitarian regime and you cherry-picked one thing, and you bastardized the truth about that, but you cherry-picked one thing and you said nice things about this regime. You can't then, because you guys on the left are hypercritical of Donald Trump trying the Trump doctrine in diplomacy and foreign diplomacy. I guess there is kind of domestic diplomacy given the divisions amongst Democrats and Republicans right now. But the president says nice things about Kim Jong-un, right? Now, the left takes him seriously and literally. They go absolutely nuts. My God, can you believe he's praising this dictator? Well, there's a very good reason to do something like that. You want to be in the good graces of somebody like that if you're trying to get them to do something and they have very little reason to do so. You want to get them to like you so that maybe you can influence their decision. The tough talk didn't necessarily work. The sanctions didn't work. The years of acquiescence hasn't worked. So trying something new is what Donald Trump is doing. And that involves kind of saying nice things about them, not saying, oh my God, the way he kills his uncle with an anti-aircraft gun is the best. No, he doesn't say anything like that. He just uses nice words about the person. He's a friend. He wrote a great letter. I greatly appreciate it. I believe we can work together. How much advancement would you think anybody would get if they're sitting down next to somebody they just had a summit with, somebody who is an adversary at a minimum, an enemy at the worst, and when asked about any progress being made, and here comes some salty language, so you might want to skip ahead 30 seconds if you don't like that sort of thing. Somebody wrote a rambling review about me and Krista Gall Friday, saying that we swore too much, and my God, it's terrible, and I just can't listen anymore. And like, whatever. But imagine you're sitting there right next to somebody. You're trying to work out a deal that matters to you and to the world. And a reporter says, well, what do you think of Dictator X? And you just go, Dictator X is a fucking douchebag. I don't trust this guy. He's a piece of crap. The world would be better off if he's dead. Let's be honest about it. If Dictator X fell into a meat grinder, I would hope that it would be on slow. He'd be unable to get out of it, but it would be on slow, just slowly grinding him to a fine mesh that could easily be made into patties or meatloaf. How much future diplomacy do you think you would have between you and Dictator X? I'm betting not a lot. If you went around and even tempered it down a little bit, like, wow, this guy's a jerk. He's a liar, a fraud, a monster, and I'm really hoping that I can get him out of office. Hopefully he dies before that. But in the meantime, I'd really like to get some sort of agreement with them that we can both come to terms with that'll stop his nuclear program. What do you think the odds of that person going, huh, well, all right, fair point. I am a bit of a douchebag. I will go for your nuclear deal. I'm betting not much. So when Donald Trump is accused of saying nice things about dictators, he doesn't really talk about them in those sorts of terms. He makes it very personal in a way to try and relate to them because you want to build trust and, dare I say, a little bit of personal rapport with them to try to make it easier to cut a deal. Now, for Bernie Sanders, Fidel Castro is long since dead. There is no reason to suck up to Fidel Castro. He's gone. He's not. Maybe he'll reserve a seat for you in hell. I don't know. But other than that, there's no real reason to suck up to Fidel Castro. Yet Bernie continues to suck up to Fidel Castro for some weird reason. And actually, when you think about it, it's not that weird of a reason whatsoever. It's because Bernie believes that Fidel Castro was doing good things. And if you have to kill a few thousand people, what's the big deal? 10, 20,000, 30,000, who cares? The end result is what matters to the left. And the end result to Bernie Sanders in Cuba is utopia. So listen to Bernie after he said those things about, oh, the literacy program is so wonderful. So what? Chris Cuomo then gives him another chance. Like, well, you know, you're saying good things about this guy, but he killed a lot of people. He was mean to, Chris Cuomo puts it very poorly, but the sentiment is there. And Bernie's response is equally as telling. He glosses over, ignores completely the murder part, the oppression part, and goes, truth is truth. I'm just focusing on the literacy thing. I don't care about the other things. So if Fidel Castro were alive, maybe Bernie Sanders, a president, Bernie Sanders would appoint him as literacy czar. Who the hell knows? But listen to this exchange. This is the second time, the first time you just heard, the second time that Bernie Sanders had a chance to unequivocally denounce Fidel Castro as a murderous, terroristic regime, and he passes and instead decides to praise him.
So, to the Democrats who say, You don't say good things about Fidel Castro. He destroyed freedoms in that country. He picked winners and losers and killed them and put them in prison forever. You don't give him a pat on the back for anything.
You don't give. It's not a question. Truth is truth. All right? Now, if you want to disagree with me, if somebody wants to say that, and by the way, all of those Congress people that you mentioned just so happen to be supporting other candidates, just accidentally, no doubt, coincidentally. But, you know, the truth is the truth. And that's what happened in the first years of the Castro regime.
The truth is the truth is the truth is the truth. And by the way, those all those people condemning me, those Democrats, they've supported other candidates. Actually, according to Josh Krashauer, one of the few good journalists out there, politics editor at National Journal, he says that's not true. Two of them, Donna Shalala and Debbie Marcusel Powell, have not endorsed anybody in the Democratic primary, Bernie. If the truth is the truth, then shouldn't you speak the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help you, Bernie? But the idea, he's like, well, you know, that's what happened in the first few years. You know what else happened in the first few years of the Castro regime? Anybody the government found to oppose them was imprisoned, was rounded up. Part of that going out into the community and trying to find who the enemies of the state are was through the literacy program. It was designed to brainwash and build trust. Now, Mayor Pete also had a town hall last night, and he actually took a swipe at Bernie Sanders. He took a swipe at Bernie Sanders while taking a swipe at Donald Trump, of course, because he's running for the Democratic Party's nomination for president. But what Pete says here about Bernie Sanders is absolutely true on the concept of division and the idea of something that I brought up quite a bit on this show and in my writings, the purity test. Your point 99.9% friend is your 100% enemy, is essentially what he says about Bernie Sanders. Listen to him.
Respect Senator Sanders. I've enjoyed getting to know him. But the reality is the politics he is offering is one that says, if you don't agree with me 100% of the time, you don't even belong at my side. It is about whose help you reject. Mm-hmm. And at a moment like this, where we have such terrible division emanating from the White House, I don't think that it makes sense to match it with a different form of division. And we see that in the tone and the tenor of his campaign and its supporters.
I would and have argued that the division as it exists in this country is from the left, that anything that is not with them is not only their opposition, it is their enemy. So I disagree with Pete on his idea that division emanates from the White House. The President of the United States, for all his flaws, and he, like everybody, has them, is not somebody who attacks people out of the blue. You know, there isn't anybody who just wakes up and one day like, oh, my God, the President of the United States is coming at me like he picked my name out of a phone book. What the hell's going on here? He just went to Facebook, loaded a random page and started attacking somebody. No, the people he goes after, he's a counterpuncher. He's said this the whole time, and I've yet to see an example of anybody that he's gone after unprovoked and unjustified to some degree or another. It just is. Now, I sometimes think he beats a dead horse, like when he kept going after Jeff Sessions. It's like, okay, you've made your point. Either fire the guy or move on. You know, you're the President of the United States. You should have better things to do than spend 6 months bitching about the Attorney General. But most of the time, it's absolutely justified, and he is hitting back at somebody. And the best way to make sure, or to at least give people pause about hitting you in the first place, is to be known for hitting back twice as hard as you get hit. Right? That's the way it is. If somebody picks on a kid in school, and when you pick on that kid in school, they just, you know, the nose, they bloody the kid person's nose who's picking on them. I bet you there aren't going to be too many people who are picking on that kid, right? That just makes sense. With me, it was a little bit different. I was always the biggest kid in class, but I was always the biggest smartass, and I was pretty quick on my feet back as a kid. And I would say they didn't usually pick on me because I was the tallest kid in class. And I certainly wasn't the nicest kid in class. So when somebody was picking on somebody, I'd sometimes join in if I thought it was justified. But if it went too far and they wouldn't let up after a while, I started to feel bad for the kid, even if he deserved it. So then I would turn it on the people doing the picking pretty quickly with the insults, and that usually shut them down. That's not how the left works. That's how not how Donald Trump works. Donald Trump, if you're coming at him, he's coming at you. And you don't want him coming at you. If you are a politician, if you're a political hack, while it may seem like, oh, goody, I'm getting some attention. Oh, wow, my social media mentions are through the roof. There's no such thing but like bad intention. No, you can lose some support. You can not have a good day being harassed. You call Donald Trump stupid, he's going to come at you. Nancy Pelosi wants to call him corrupt. He goes at her big time, as he should. I'm so sick of these Republicans who play nice with people who beat on them. Oh, I'm sorry that you punched me in the face. Did my face happen to hurt your fist? Might I apologize for that as well? That kind of Republicanism is the path to losing. It always has been the path to losing, whether it's elections or legislatively. It doesn't really matter. Donald Trump doesn't play that game. So he's not out there randomly attacking people and dividing people. It is the Democrats who talk about the people who have money and the people who don't have money. It is Democrats who talk about white people versus black and brown people. It is Democrats who talk about straight people versus gay people versus trans people versus pod people or whatever the hell new sexuality they're coming up with. It is Democrats who constantly, it's workers versus employers. It is the haves versus the have-nots. It is Wall Street versus Main Street. Those words don't come out of Republicans. They don't sit there and judge people by what they look like or what they do for a living. Democrats do. Oh, you have a menial job. I'm so sorry you have a menial job. I, as a government, will grant you a better life. No, I'm not going to grant you a better life. You got to do that on your own. You're a freaking loser if you're looking to the government to solve your problems. So while Pete is right about the purity test on the left, and it is nice to see the left eat their own, and they are, he's wrong about the president of the United States. But just as an aside, I find it interesting that now tonight we have another debate, and it's the last debate before, it might be the last debate before Super Tuesday. It's definitely the last debate before the South Carolina primary. It'll be interesting to see where the attacks are directed in this debate. The last debate, it was all swipes at nonstop swipes at Mike Bloomberg. Mike Bloomberg this, he's says mean things about women, he's got non-disclosure agreements, so on and so forth. They all brought their long knives for Mike Bloomberg, which I thought was, you know, entertaining, but really stupid. Why do you go after the guy who's nationally polling in his best polls third, who isn't on the ballot in Nevada or in South Carolina? Why are you attacking him when you've got the guy who's leading in all those polls, Bernie Sanders, sitting right there? Why do you leave him largely unscathed? And nobody was really unscathed in that debate, but Bernie Sanders certainly did not suffer the body blows that Michael Bloomberg did. I don't understand why they did that, and it'll be interesting to see. I really kind of, and this is me geeking out, but I'm kind of interested to see what happens in this debate. Will the Democrats wake the hell up, pull their heads out of where their ideas come from, and attack the person who is winning these primaries? We'll see. Lord knows there's fertile ground, but they're walking on thin ice if they go after Bernie Sanders. And how they go after Bernie Sanders is very important, because Bernie Sanders has 30% of the Democratic base that is just going to be with him no matter what. I think they're gettable to the nominee. If the nominee is not Bernie Sanders, they're gettable if they feel as though Bernie lost fair and square, right? unlike 2016 when Bernie got screwed and the DNC was playing all these games, if Bernie has a shot and he just loses in the end, somebody else gets a majority of the delegates, I think that the Bernie bros will likely vote for that nominee. And that'll be problematic for Republicans because that would mean the entirety of the Democratic Party would be unified rather than bifurcated, torn apart the way they kind of are now. If it's Bernie with a plurality of the delegates going into the convention but not a majority, and then they use backroom deals and finagling to rip the nomination from Bernie, then the Democrats are screwed. The 30% that are Bernie supporters will never vote for the Democratic nominee, no matter how wholeheartedly Bernie Sanders endorses them. If they feel like he got screwed even through the primary process and somebody gets it, somebody else actually wins it outright, I'm not sure that Bernie bros will forgive that person. Certainly not 100% of them. So however anybody goes after Bernie Sanders tonight, they're going to have to be very careful about that. They're going to have to be very deliberate. It can't be personal, and it can't be about the policies. It should be. It should be about the policies, and it should be personal. You should attack somebody who refuses to condemn despotic regimes because ideologically they implemented the socialism that you so revere, but they're not dealing with Bernie directly. Remember, Bernie, when attacked, generally recoils. Not always. He didn't in the last debate, but generally he recoils. He walks away. He doesn't want to engage in that level. That puts anybody who does attack him relentlessly in a position where they could come off as one of the worst things you can come off as in the Democratic primary, and that's a bully. Why are you bullying and badgering this sweet old man who was nice to you, who didn't want to engage with you in a fight, and here you are calling him a communist or a socialist or what have you? So it's really the dynamic that's going to go on in this debate tonight is very interesting and important going forward. It really, really is. Speaking of losers, oh God. So I'm kind of watching this these CNN town halls, right? And I see this woman out of the corner of my eye get up and talk about her college debt issue. And as somebody, I still owe, I don't know, 12 grand or 16 grand. I don't even know. I just know that I pay every month on student loans. It sucks. And I can't wait to not have to pay on my student loans. Well, this woman gets up and she tells her sad tale of woe. I'm going to play her question first and then Bernie's answer. And Bernie and I disagree significantly on the answer, but I want to point out how dumb she is. No, I'm not going to point it out, but just pay attention. You're about to hear somebody painfully stupid, like Olympic level stupid, if her story's true. And if her story isn't true, why in the hell would you stand up on national television, even CNN, and announce to the world, make it up to the world, that you're a complete freaking moron? Listen to this student and Bernie's exchange about student loans.
Senator Sanders, this May I will be graduating from law school with over $250,000 in student loan debt, the majority from my undergraduate education. What is your plan to help students like me with student loan debt, and how do you plan to pay for it?
Thank you, Beverly. Our campaign is asking the American people to think outside of the box. What Beverly just described is insane. That's what it is. What crime did she commit? She wanted to get an education. This is the wealthiest country on earth. People should not have to go $250,000 in debt to get an education.
People, of course, don't have to go $250,000 in debt to get an education, you freaking moron. My response to this woman would be, she says she got $250,000 in debt after graduating law school, but the majority of her debt comes from her undergraduate degree. And she asked, Bernie asked, what was her crime? Her crime was being incredibly stupid. I don't know where you can go to undergraduate school to get $200,000 to $250,000 worth of student loans. I don't know what college that, I assume it's like an Ivy League school. There's no reason to go to an Ivy League school for undergraduate if you can't afford it and don't have scholarships to go for it. And if you decide to actively take out $250,000 worth of loans to go to the most expensive schools in the country and perhaps the world, rather than going someplace sensible, sensibly priced, why is that my responsibility? I would love to see Bernie Sanders say, listen to her question, go, well, what the hell is wrong with you? Why would you go to that school? For an undergraduate degree? There is no undergraduate degree on the face of the earth that would ever allow you to pay back that money. What the hell were you thinking? I can't absolve you of your debt, because ultimately, your real problem isn't the debt, it's your stupid. Your stupid is going to permeate everything you do in life, especially if you are absolved of consequences. So I'm not going to absolve you of consequences because you're a moron. You're a damn moron. So you are going to have to figure out a way. You better be a damn good lawyer. And you're going to have to go out and make a lot of money to pay back what you got. Because if the lion's share of her debt came from her undergraduate school, would she go to like some Caribbean law school or something? How in the hell does that work? Did she get scholarships? Well, did it not occur to her to maybe get scholarships for undergraduate work? Did it ever occur to her to maybe get off her ass and get a job while she's going to undergrad? No, it didn't. Because liberals don't like consequences for their actions. They want some external force, government, to absolve them of responsibility for that. And you know what you get when you absolve people for responsibility for irresponsible actions? You get more irresponsible actions because there are no consequences for them anymore. The irresponsibility factor goes away. It almost becomes irresponsible not to act irresponsibly and take out gigantic amounts of loans because the government is just going to ride into the rescue. Think about this as we wrap it up. As all of these Democrats talk about their plans to forgive student loan debt for everybody, except for the people who were like suckers who already paid it, how many people out there are taking out extra student loans right now? Under the assumption that a Democrat, either this time or next time or sometime in the near future, is going to be elected president of the United States, and therefore they will, one way or another, be absolved of that debt. I bet it's more than one. I bet there are quite a few people out there who could probably get by on a subsidized loan coupled with a Pell Grant who go, screw it. Bernie's going to forgive me. Elizabeth Warren's going to forgive all this thing. So I'm going to take out the maximum subsidized, the maximum unsubsidized. Give me some Perkins loans. Give me everything you got. Load me up with debt. Now, if this doesn't happen, when this plan to absolve everybody of all their debt doesn't happen, guess who's getting screwed the hardest? Yeah, those very same people, the supporters of these morons who believe that the government is ultimately going to come riding into their rescue because they were stupid and wildly irresponsible and took advantage of something they should have known better about when they were adults. These contracts, these loans are taken out by adults just because they don't act like it, just because they don't think like it, just because nobody around them said, hey, wait a second, you should think twice about this, does not mean they're still children. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and telling a friend and all that good stuff. The Patreon site is patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast if you want to help me pay my student loans. Otherwise, have a fine Tuesday. And tomorrow on the program, we'll recap. We'll see if there's any blood drawn in the latest Democrat debate.
Truth is truth.